Hi everyone, welcome to the Hypno Talks episode number 5. Today we are talking again with Alison Loney, clinical hypnotherapist from North Vancouver and the founder of Virtus Clinical Hypnotherapy. In this episode we are talking about anxiety and we discuss how hypnotherapy is used in the management of anxiety and stress. Thank you for listening. Please welcome Alison Loney.
Hi, Alison. Thank you so much for being with us again. And today we have this very special topic of anxiety, its place in our everyday life, and also how to manage anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And anxiety is such a broad topic. It ranges from mild worries to panic attacks and everything in between. Different people have very different sensations when they have anxiety. They have different probably images in their heads or some sort of an internal dialogue or even physical components that are very, very strong, like feeling lightheaded, feeling this heartbeat, all sorts of things. So I wonder, do you encounter a lot of people with this issue in your practice?
So the short answer is yes. Anxiety, I think now more than ever before, is very predominant with a lot of clients and people in general. And there are, you know, many different reasons for that. And like you mentioned earlier, there is a wide range of symptoms for anxiety. You know, there's generalized anxiety all the way to panic disorder, which involves your fight or flight system. And so that's a very physical type of anxiety. All are treatable with hypnosis. And yes, I see a lot of people with anxiety issues. One of them is sort of what we call anticipatory anxiety, which is almost having been anxious so many times, maybe about a specific stimulus, or maybe just having a lot of anxious situations that they almost anticipate being anxious about an upcoming either event or situation. And that is also an issue now.
Mm-hmm. It seems like in many other cases, when people come for hypnotherapy, and quite often it's smoking cessation or weight loss, those cravings, those uncomfortable symptoms associated with the issue they present with kind of is rooted in anxiety in a way. It's a form of anxiety. So cravings, it's we can say quite safely that it's a form of anxiety. It seems like it's very similar in process and how we go about this. What do you think?
Well, it's true that people try and satiate sort of anxious feelings with something external, whether it be food or whether it be any type of craving, smoking or anything like that. But I think it's important to remember that that is almost a suggestion that the client, almost like a hypnotic suggestion the client gives themselves over and over, that if I do this, I will feel better. And the more you do something, of course, the more your brain gets good at it and is expectant of it. So it's just as easy for the client to give themselves a positive suggestion as it is a negative. I don't know why, but people are more inclined to give themselves negative suggestions over and over, but you can change that into something positive. And that really anchors well with the brain, especially if you pair it with imagery. And that's where, you know, hypnosis is really comes in well for anxiety, whether you're treating a specific anxiety that could be anything from, you know, an anxiety about exams, or it could be public speaking, or it could be the client comes in and they're just generally anxious and they really don't know the root cause. And then at that point, it's more important to sort of get back to what the root cause of the anxiety is. And sometimes they come in thinking they know the initial sensitizing event, and sometimes you go back and they're surprised by the initial sensitizing event and they realize that what they've been thinking it was wasn't actually the thing. So root cause can be really important for treating anxiety as well with hypnosis.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So it's a whole interactive process that allows to go back and kind of a sort of a regression. Is it correct? In this
yes,
case.
You can, I think there are sort of two ways to treat it. And one is regression. You can go back with them to times in their life where they felt really anxious and try and sort of suss out the root cause that way. Mm-hmm. If they come in saying, I feel anxious and I don't know why, and in sort of the intake discussion with clients, you can say, well, when was the last time you felt this way? Or let's do parts therapy and speak to the part that is keeping you anxious, and you can kind of regress that way. Yeah, so there's a couple different ways, but it really depends on the level of anxiety and why it's happening and how it's presenting in the client's life.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it's possible to manage anxiety effectively without necessarily going to the root cause in some cases.
I would say yes to that. Mm-hmm. Just like if you have a cold and you take medication for it, it doesn't get rid of the virus, but it does manage the symptoms. I would say you can manage anxiety, especially when it's over something specific. You can definitely manage the symptoms with hypnosis and then keep that going with self-hypnosis. That's another really good tool to manage anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And also maybe taking breaks, and self-hypnosis is a form of taking a break during the day.
It's a way to focus in, mm-hmm. which is important.
It doesn't have to be very, very long. It can take maybe 5 minutes and be very beneficial.
Oh, yeah. I tell clients, like, even 60 seconds. One of the tricks I use is anchoring. So if you have a client under hypnosis and they're in a state of well-being at that moment, and the images we've created and what they're seeing and feeling is positive around whatever it is we're working on, you can anchor it in by doing a physical activity like pressing your forefinger and your thumb together while seeing and experiencing and hitting as many of the senses as you can. You can anchor that in the moment, and then they can take that anchor with them once out of hypnosis in their everyday life, press their finger and thumb together and go back to that state.
Mm-hmm. And talking about anchors, I think it's important to note that each time we create an anchor, it's important to reinforce it.
You have to reinforce it, unfortunately. It's like, mm-hmm. it's like homework. They have to do it at mm-hmm. least as often as they can during the day, as often as they remember. And it only takes a few seconds, but it's one of those things that you need to do repeatedly for it to be completely effective. Mm-hmm. But once you get it, it's amazing how you can, it doesn't even need to be, you can also grab an object that you like and hold it. And then in the future, when you hold that object again, you go back to that state of confidence or euphoria or whatever it is you want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. The only problem with this is if you don't have this object, then you might end up in a situation like in that cartoon. You remember Dumbo when he lost his feather and he couldn't fly anymore.
Yeah. That's why the thumb and forefinger works really well, because you can do it anywhere at any time. People don't even really have to know what you're doing. This is just an internal mm-hmm. something that you're triggering.
I wonder about this whole curiosity about how people create anxiety, because to be honest, we create that ourselves. So we do something in our internal world. We don't necessarily realize it, but we do something to build up and increase this feeling. So probably we might create pictures of some events. Talk to ourselves.
It's true. We do build upon. And this goes back to what I was saying about anticipatory anxiety. Once you've had a past uncomfortable situation or maybe even a traumatic stimulus of some sort, it's very easy, of course, to remember it, but then to fear it happening again. So when a client sometimes gets around any type of related stimuli that can form a trigger back to that initial event, that's when anxiety is created. And many times people will worry about it happening again, even though there is no indication of anything around that's similar. So anxiety is created by sort of keeping on mm-hmm. fear of it happening again onto the initial event that happened.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you use a lot of NLP in your work, if you work with those images and those internal sounds in any way, or you prefer other methods.
I do use some NLP, definitely. I just try, and the imagery is really important, and trying to sort of encompass all of the senses mm-hmm. when you're working with anxiety. It's really good to get grounded. And that goes for when they're in hypnosis or when they're out of hypnosis in their everyday life. to really be able to know where you are, feel, smell, taste, and you know, anything you can encompass from your senses that really grounds you into the moment, because anxiety is future-based thinking. Mm. It's taking yourself out of the moment and worrying about what may or may not happen. So it's really important to know that that's not happening now. And even in worst case scenario, if it did happen, you've already gone ahead and worried twice. You may as well worry only if something does happen rather than worrying about it before it even happens. So you really have to get the client back into where they're at in the moment.
And what is your favorite process of getting grounded and getting back to the present moment?
Well, under hypnosis, if you're giving direct suggestion and using imagery, you can take them to their favorite place, wherever that is. And that's also a good way to anchor something in that they can use quickly when in their everyday life. Mm-hmm. But whether it's, you know, a beach or they're somewhere in nature usually, or even their bedroom, somewhere where they've felt safe in the past, you can take them back there and you can really have them frame that and anchor that in while you're hitting all their senses.
That's and for them, being in the moment of when they start to feel a little bit of anxiety creeping in, what would be a very straightforward and easy process for them to manage this?
In their everyday life?
Yes.
They can right away take note of what they're seeing, mm-hmm. What they're feeling, what they're smelling. Get them to name three things in their head that they can see, smell, sight, you know, taste, sound, hit all their senses. And that really gets you back into where you are in the moment, mm-hmm. rather than you can spiral very easily thinking about what may happen. And unfortunately, most people think about what may happen in the negative instead of thinking about all the glorious things that actually can happen. And the likelihood of what they're fearing happening mm-hmm. is usually very minimal.
Yes. And they say that it's a protection function of our brain to search for dangers around us, to anticipate something bad. Sometimes it's just our brain doing a little bit too much of this. And we live in, at least here in Western world, we live in a very safe environment. So
that's the primal brain. That's why panic disorder, why you go into fight or flight. That's completely a primal instinct. But mm-hmm. I think that people like to be prepared for worst case scenarios, but there's a difference between being intellectually prepared for something and then letting it actually manifest in your body. So you're having physical symptoms, that's anxiety, and that's something completely different.
Mm-hmm. I really like the book which is called Rewire Your Anxious Brain by Catherine Pittman and Elizabeth Carl. Or Carly, I'm not sure how to pronounce. And Catherine Pittman is actually a licensed psychologist. And in this book, they explain that anxiety comes from two different places. One is the cortex, this very recent part of the brain that human developed during the evolution. And the other part is very, very old and ancient, which is amygdala. And sometimes our cortex can contribute because it creates those images and thoughts. And amygdala is this initiator because it keeps those emotional memories and also triggers this fight and flight response. And sometimes people can get into this panic mode without realizing why, like you mentioned. And also at this point, reasoning doesn't seem to work for them. So it's like this physical reaction that is developing, and no amount of thinking to themselves that they are safe does the trick.
Yes, especially with panic disorder. Mm-hmm. It's already taken hold in your physical body, and it reacts as if you're in a life or death situation.
Mm-hmm. It seems like in this case, it's better to go to basics and change physiology. And the easiest way is through breathing. So to change the breathing pattern and the posture, which helps to
slow four breaths out. That's the way you have to sort of counteract the diaphragm. And breathing, once you're in that fight or flight mode, there's really no other way to manage it other than managing your physical symptoms at that point. So that's why it's good to work through hypnosis prior, so you can learn, sort of change your mind about these things at a subconscious level. Because you mentioned earlier that most people aren't thinking about it when it manifests. I would say that most panic attacks happen when people aren't really thinking about it. It's something that just kind of hits you and that comes from the subconscious. So that's where you need to change it.
Yes. And in this book, it's actually, it has a lot of techniques that are very much related to our hypnotic processes. It's a progressive relaxation. It's an anchor for a safe space or something similar. So I was really enjoying reading this book, and it's based on neuroscience, and it confirms that many tools that we use, like almost in every hypnotic session, whatever the issue is, are basically backed by neuroscience.
Definitely, yeah.
So I really recommend this book, Rewire Your Anxious Brain. Great tool. And also another book by hypnotherapist Melissa Tears from New York.
Yes.
It's very short and concise. It's called Anti-Anxiety Toolkit. And it has many different techniques that can help in a moment, or if you apply them regularly to manage anxiety. Some of them are very easy, very short. Some of them are a little bit more elaborate and take probably a partner. A hypnotherapist is the best. So it's a very valuable book also. And talking about the triggers, I mean, in this case, anchors to the peaceful place. Mm-hmm. It seems like anchors come in all flavors and all different forms. So we can use a physical touch, as you mentioned, two fingers, that this movement that we don't necessarily do in our life. So it's very specific. And we also can use a word, right?
Yes, that is true. Anything that really resonates and works for the client. Yeah, something that they think that they will remember easily and be able to do anywhere, because that's important, because you can't always have a place to sort of go and breathe and employ something that's going to take a while. You need to be able to take, you know, sometimes within a minute and do something quick. But once you establish an anchor, whether it's, you know, something, a word, or I think it's best to sort of employ something physical with imagery, just because it really, the brain really responds well to images. Once you practice that, and you really need to practice it a lot, and you get that anchor in, it's really amazing. It works really well for people with the fear of flying too, for instance. Once you get that anchor and you do that, the sense of sort of well-being and peace that can flood through your body, it's really worth it to practice anchoring.
Even the deep breath or four deep breath in a row, it's something quite specific that we don't necessarily do without thinking about it. It's just we use our consciousness to start this process, so it's tailored to the situation. This can serve as an anchor, and it's very discreet, so probably people will not necessarily notice that you're breathing differently.
Yeah, deep breathing is good on so many levels, but it does help to sort of bring you back to where you're at in the moment.
And like, just important note again, that anchor should be practiced regularly for it to be effective once it's established.
Definitely. And you can also teach the client self-hypnosis.
Yeah, I think it should be a part of any session.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's easier to do self-hypnosis with an audio recording. For some people, it's just easier to be guided and use this as a bridge to their own processes so that they can start self-hypnosis and doing it like by themselves later.
Yeah, it's just going to further enforce the session you've had with them and really expedite the healing.
And talking about self-talk, I just wanted to mention that sometimes we tend to use this negative formulations like don't. It's like that story about when people are running around, there's a fire somewhere, and you stop someone and you say, don't panic. And the only thing they hear is panic, panic,
right.
Panic. So if we tell ourselves something similar, we should really pay attention to how we word this. So stay calm.
Or breathe. I am calm. I am calm and I am breathing.
Our unconscious gets the message right away, because this negative formula, it should first figure out the meaning and then cancel.
Yeah, it's for the same reason we don't talk about quitting smoking. We say smoking cessation or stopping smoking, and that's because people respond a certain way to negatives, and one of them is humans don't like to be quitters, so that word has meaning, mm-hmm. whether they realize it or not. So yes, word choice is very important with hypnosis, especially self-hypnosis. A little trick I tell people is, in those moments where you're maybe in your car and you're sitting at a red light and you have those moments where you're lost in thought or you're not really cognizant, just for a few seconds, that is a form of hypnosis. You're in a self-hypnosis. So when you sort of wake up out of that and you be cognizant of what you are thinking or telling yourself during those moments, because those moments matter. So if you realize that you're scrolling and you're kind of in a daze, you're scrolling through social media, be cognizant of what you're taking in and use those moments to tell yourself something like, I am really calm, or this is a great day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's important. It's to leverage all those moments that occur naturally in our life when we are in this almost very close to hypnotic state.
Because I think those moments can increase anxiety depending on what you're telling yourself, because you do slip in out of those moments all day.
Especially if your newsfeed is flooded with unsettling news about what happens in the world or some other things that might bother you personally.
Or just when you're setting off to work in your car, people tend to sort of be going through their laundry list, mm-hmm. of what they need to do that day, and that tends to create worry. So instead, just tell yourself, this is a great day. I'm having a great day.
Mm-hmm. That's really valuable. It's just important to remember to do this. I think it gets into a habit at some point, but first it takes a little bit of self-awareness to start changing these internal messages. Mm-hmm. So I think we covered pretty much everything I put here on my list, unless you want to add something else that
Yeah, I would just say that if you're struggling with anxiety, really consider hypnosis as a modality for change, because it's very effective. And if you just feel a generalized sense of unrest and you're not sure why, you can get to the root cause of it with hypnosis. And we discussed root cause earlier, and I will say that I do think root cause, if you can ever get to root cause of something, is so helpful, because once you shed light on something, it tends to dissolve. So that's really the benefit of root cause, but symptoms can be managed too.
Mm-hmm. Because what happens quite often, if you get to the root cause and from the position you are in as an adult, as a person who had so many different experiences and learnings, you just see that situation from such a different angle. So it completely changes meaning, and you just release the situation in a way. So it's very liberating as experience.
Yes, because memory is unreliable, really, especially if you're going back many years. So your perception of what happened may not be reality. So you need to just change the perception of the event.
The meaning of
the meaning, yeah.
Because we are meaning-making machines, it seems. Like everything that happens, we tend to create a meaning out of it. And probably our meaning only exists for us. That's a very interesting thing. Somebody else would make a completely different meaning out of the same situation.
Oh yeah, it happens all the time. People see situations completely in a different way. So you're absolutely, that's a whole other podcast we should do.
Yeah, but it's cool to be able to shift this meaning and see how it just changes.
Yeah, and we get to create our own, and as humans, we create our own stories all the time to make situations maybe more palatable in our lives, or to, you know, tell ourselves something that we can live with. So yes, we get to kind of create our own stories around things.
It's basically as two people going in the rain and the weather is not nice. And one person is so annoyed and just says, in his head, it is so annoying. I'm so tired of this rain. I'm just so soaked and I'm freezing. And I probably will catch a cold or something. And the other person is just walking under an umbrella and just watching these flowers and thinks, the flowers will get more water. Probably we will have a nice year with lots of fruits because of this rain. So it's completely different perception. It's very simplistic, but I think
it illustrates. Good, it's a good example. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So thank you so much. I think I just wanted to tell one more thing. Yeah, talking about this future event, as hypnotherapists, we have quite a few interesting techniques that we can apply when there is something in the future, some sort of event that people are anxious about, that we can apply in terms of somewhat like a rehearsal, very specific techniques.
Yeah,
that are very, very useful. Yeah, and it's so amazing. I use it on myself for fear of flying. And I was amazed how it worked for me, because I literally was panicking on an airplane. Then I started to apply this to myself, like regularly before flight, like in a few days or maybe in a few weeks, just imagining and like going through the steps. And finally, I felt very calm on an airplane, unless there was really extreme turbulence when I started to have a little bit of anxious feelings.
That's when you need the anchor during turbulence.
Yeah. Right.
But we were talking earlier about, future testing is when you have a client in hypnosis, you never bring them out unless they're in a state of feeling good. Mm-hmm. You don't bring them out when they're not. So sort of a state of almost resolution to the issue. But before you bring them out, you future test. If it's an event, say, I'm going to use the example of public speaking because it's people's biggest fear. If they have an event coming in, they're public speaking, you have them visualize what's going to happen when you're public speaking. And when they're in that state of well-being, they generally see a lot of positives. Mm-hmm. So you can take them through visualizing what that is going to look like in the audience response. And then you can anchor that in at that point. So that's also a really effective way of ensuring that it's going to be a great experience.
Mm-hmm. Especially through repetition, it will be very powerful. Once they get to the situation, they will be basically expect it to be good.
Well, that's what I mean. We're so good at repeating fear-based mm-hmm. thoughts to ourselves. Like, why not? It's just as easy to repeat great experiences.
Yes. Yes. So. Sometimes it's not as easy just because there is a habit of this anticipatory.
And there's anticipatory anxiety. And yes. So many people don't even realize they struggle with that. The what ifs. Well, what if this happens? Well, what if it doesn't?
Mm-hmm. So it takes a bit of practice and then it builds up to a new habit that is more...
Yeah, it's all about changing
uplifting.
Habits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this rich and useful and wonderful exchange that we had today. It will be very useful for people to listen to, and it
will
be available.
Thank you, Tatiana. It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much, and have a great day. And have a great day, everyone.
Thank you.
This audio is brought to you by EasyHypnosis.ca.